Check out my new book, Coping Courageously, a heart-centered guide for navigating a loved one's illness without losing yourself. It's appropriate for you as a clinician, for your patients, and for anyone you know who has a seriously ill loved one or an aging parent. Check it out and tell a friend. Welcome to the Integrative Palliative Podcast, where we help physicians and other clinicians master the art of integrative symptom management so they can wholeheartedly care for themselves as they expertly care for their patients. Welcome to the Integrative Palliative Podcast. I'm Dr. Delia Caramonte, and today I want to share with you 8 ideas that I came away with from the 2024 International Congress on Integrative Medicine and Health. This is the Congress put on by the Academic Consortium for Integrative Medicine and Health, an organization that I've been involved with for more than a decade, maybe more than a decade and a half. It is really a wonderful organization. If integrative medicine speaks to you at all, you might want to connect with them because they are thoughtful, smart, academic people looking to use all the tools possible to increase people's health and wellness. It's a really great, great group. So anyway, I went to the Congress this year, as I often do, and I always take notes. And this time I thought, gosh, let me look at all my notes and put together what are the 8 things that I really feel like, ooh, I want to make sure that I remember and I wanted to share with all of you. So they're kind of unrelated and they're in no particular order, but there's 8 of them. So here we go. Number 1 is I was struck by this idea of micro skills for wellness, which of course I teach all the time. I talk about this all the time, doing little things here and there, but I really liked this idea of putting it in a box of what are the micro skills for wellness that you will put in your own treatment toolbox for yourself. I think our black and white thinking gets in the way sometimes of, oh, I can't do a whole 30 minutes of yoga, so I'll do nothing. Or I can't go for a 20-minute run, so I'll do nothing. Or I don't have time to meditate, so I'll just scroll on TikTok or YouTube. But this idea of micro skills is knowing, you know, let's say 5 or 10 micro skills that are in your box that you can pull out a couple times a day. So you're doing something instead of nothing. It could be 1 yoga pose. So when I go outside to take my dog out, which I do a bunch of times a day, I almost always do 1 Qigong move that is like a lift your arms and your head to the sky when you take a deep breath and then bring your arms down to the side. I don't know why I do that, but I almost always do that. And it's such a good reminder. It opens up my chest. It has me take a deep breath. It makes me look at the sky, straightens up my spine. So I'm not doing a Qigong class on YouTube, but every time I go outside, I do that one thing. So is there 1 yoga pose? Is there 1 little breathing exercise that you could do at a regular time? Could you take 3 diaphragmatic breaths every time you go to the bathroom, for example? When you use hand sanitizer, can you focus your attention on the feel and the smell and the sound just for a breath or two? Can you do squats while you're waiting for your coffee to heat up in the microwave? So think about this idea of micro skills. Pick a couple of them and put them in your pocket so that when you have 20 seconds, you can do a thing. If you do it over the course of a day, you get a few things rather than no things. So micro skills for wellness, that's 1. Number 2 for me was thinking about a definition of healing presence. I talk about healing presence all the time. I teach about it all the time. But I have always had a bit of a challenge defining what I mean. I know what I mean in my head, in my heart, I know what I mean. But I've had a hard time putting it into words. And so one of the sessions that I went to, they talked about healing presence as a sincere attitude of kindness and caring for another person. A sincere attitude of kindness and caring for another person. And with the added idea of setting an intention to be fully present with that person. I really like that, 1, because I like to have a definition of what I'm talking about. But I also really liked it because they were talking specifically about how can people do that when they really don't have any time in the office. You know, I don't have time to hear the person's whole story and to do counseling for an hour. I have maybe 8 minutes with this person. And so the presenter who was talking about healing presence in this way, a sincere attitude of kindness and caring for another person with the intention to be fully present, you can do that for 5 seconds. So they were talking about bring that attitude and do it just while you're shaking hands. Just don't distractedly shake hands or distractedly say hello. But even if it's for 5 seconds, 10, 20, 30 seconds, have this sincere attitude of kindness and caring for the patient with an intention to be fully present. And that doing that does not have to add any time to your visit whatsoever. So I loved that. So think about that. Healing presence, even in 15-second chunks. Can you put that into your day, even if it's just your first patient? Because, you know, the day gets away from you. Even if it's just your first patient, can you think about that? A sincere attitude of kindness and caring, an intention to be fully present, even if it's just while you say hello to the first patient of the day. Number 3, I went to a session on boundaries, which I think is a really important topic. And I just learned a phrase that I loved that I want to share with you. The phrase is this: this person's suffering or pain or loneliness or whatever is not mine. This person's pain is not mine. This person's loneliness is not mine. This person's difficult life is not mine. This person's suffering is not mine. Now, I know this is not earth-shattering per se, but somehow it is. Because it's one thing to say, oh, I'll try not to take on other people's pain. It's another thing to say this to yourself, maybe even as you're leaving a difficult exam room situation with a patient. This person's suffering is not mine. Maybe you put it on a little sticky over your computer where you do charting, or on your desk, or at home on your mirror. This person's suffering is not mine. So you can be fully kind and caring and present with all your healing presence and still say, this person's suffering is not mine, so that you don't take it all in, so that you can continue to show up, not quit medicine unless you want to, not get burnt out, but set some boundaries on other people's pain so it doesn't get into you. This person's suffering is not mine. That's number 3. Now, number 4 is a much more medical type topic. I went to a session on photobiomodulation, which was fabulous. This is low-level light therapy, red light therapy that you may have heard about. And what I learned is that what it does is increase the metabolism of the cell and decreases oxidative stress. So basically, it sets whatever cell you're using it on up to do its best regular behavior. Whatever that cell is supposed to do, it improves the ability of that cell to do that. So because of that, it can be used for all kinds of different diverse conditions, including neuropathic pain, traumatic brain injury, tendon repair, PTSD, even healing of diabetic foot ulcers. But this is important because it increases metabolism of cells. You should avoid it in areas where you have concern that there is or might be cancer. Avoid it in cancer. Number 5, I went to a whole session on the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is so fabulous. It is the body's super highway. So the vagus nerve connects the brain to the gut, the liver, spleen, pancreas, to the heart, the lungs. It helps regulate our mood and even immune response through the gut. So the vagus nerve is the nerve that stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system response. So it's very important for decreasing the stress response and improving people's well-being, physiologic and emotional and mental well-being. But what this session was about was quite interesting. One is that there are vagus nerve stimulators often used in the office. There are some that are available for use at home. They're still a couple $1,000s at the moment, but maybe stay tuned. Is this something that will become more available for patients to use at home, vagal nerve stimulators? But also I learned that breath work and singing are thought to stimulate the vagus nerve. So we'll probably have a podcast episode on this in the future when I find somebody who does breath work and singing and knows about the vagus nerve, because I'm very interested in this. But for now, Keep in mind, look for things that stimulate the vagus nerve because you get so much benefit out of that since it is such a long nerve and it is associated with the parasympathetic nervous system response, the relaxation response rather than stress response. That's five. Number six, oh my gosh, the room where the session on psychedelics was held was so packed. I was sitting on the floor and tons of other people were sitting on the floor. There is so much interest in psychedelics. I can't teach you all that I learned about psychedelics, but we will definitely have a future podcast on psychedelics specifically. But here's a couple things that I thought were interesting. One is that some of them work on serotonin receptors, including psilocybin, ayahuasca, and peyote, and that many of them are thought to help with pain, depression, PTSD, even OCD. And psychedelics are being used with good success on people who have existential dread or fear around death. And why would that be? Here's one thought, that they seem to disrupt the default mode network of our brain. And the default mode network is the seat of our ego. So the part of our brain that makes us feel like us. And so when you temporarily disrupt that, that is probably why many people who take psychedelics feel a oneness with the universe. So rather than feeling like a discrete ego, separate person, which is normally how we feel, as the default mode network breaks up temporarily, people feel connected to everything else that isn't them. And that connection with all beings, with the whole universe, seems to reduce some people's fears of death, which I thought was very interesting. And then apparently, about 48 to 72 hours after this experience, you have a particular ability to make new neural connections and cement new ways of thinking and new ways of being as your default mode network comes back online, which is very interesting and also why it's important, I think, to do these experiences with a guide rather than doing them on their own. So basically, nobody is recommending that people just go do psychedelics on their own, but rather that this is a guided experience with a person who has expertise in guiding people through the experience of psychedelics. Now, this is, of course, a little fraught because some of the psychedelics are not legal in the United States. MDMA, I learned, is legal in Australia, which I did not know. Ketamine is legal in the US and is used specifically for pain and depression. So stay tuned for more on psychedelics. I think it's a really fascinating topic for the serious illness and end of life population. Number seven, this is a well-being question for our patients, of course, but maybe even for us. But I really liked this question posed in this way. This came from work at the VA. Here's the question. What is most important to you right now? What is most important to you right now? And in the past month, how much are you engaging with that one thing? Think about that. What is the most important thing to you right now? And in the past month, how much have you been engaging with that one thing? You can see why that's so important. Because if someone says, religion is the most important thing to me, well, how much have you been engaging? Oh, I haven't. I stopped going to church. I don't pray anymore. That's a problem, right? Suppose they choose family. Well, how much have you been engaging with your family? Not at all. Again, that's a problem. So this is kind of a key to see, are people living their life in concert with their primary value? And I just thought that was a really good question to pull out of your pocket at the right time. What's the most important thing to you right now? And in the past month, how much have you been engaging with that one thing? And then number eight is funny, but I liked it and I think I'm going to use it. The instruction was, if you're feeling, woe is me, look in the mirror and say, yo, it's me. I know it's silly, but the real idea there is let's own us rather than always feeling, oh, I'm not doing it well enough, or someone else does it better, or gosh, why did that happen to me? It's like, stand up tall, look in the mirror and say, yo, it's me. It's like taking up space. So I'm going to try it. And that's your homework for this week. Even if you feel silly, try to do it out loud. Look in the mirror and say, yo, it's me. I'm taking up space. I'm important. Yo, it's me. And we're going to end it right there. Thank you so much for listening. I so appreciate you. Please, please, please subscribe and leave a review on the podcast. It helps me so much. And I'm so glad you're here. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. This podcast is brought to you by the Integrative Palliative Institute. Visit our website, integrativepalliative.com. There you can access physician and clinician training, well-being coaching, free downloads, and other cool stuff. And feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and share your favorite episode with a friend.